St. John's is number one, but Duval isn't even in the top 10. Just ahead, what new county health rankings mean for Florida and the First Coast. Good morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show's always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and watch the show now video on demand at our partners TVJax.com and MetroJacksonville.com. Just ahead, we'll take your calls on the health of your county, wherever you happen to be across the First Coast, 549-2937. Then later, a look ahead to this area's landmark women's leadership event, Generation W. Plus, contributor Nick Michaud on Batman versus Superman. All of that ahead and more. But first this hour, the healthiest county in Florida is St. John's County. But Duval is lagging way behind, barely cracking the top 50. That's according to a new study out last week measuring the overall health in almost every county in the United States. Now, this report broke down numbers into two categories, health factors and health outcomes. Both lists show St. John's County is the healthiest in Florida, but other Northeast Florida counties don't do quite so well. Brian Campbell is CEO of the Duval County Medical Society, and he joins us now with more about these rankings and what they mean for your corner of the state. Good to see you, Brian.
Thank you so much for having me.
And what are your questions about the health of your county, whether it's Duval, St. John's, Nassau, Clay, Putnam, Baker? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet us or weigh in on Facebook. And Brian, right off the bat, we are looking at a really stark contrast between our collection of counties in Northeast Florida. St. John's, number one, Clay and Nassau, 6th and 10th in the state rankings. Duval County, 48th. Out of 67 counties.
Well, that's right. And there's a definite stark contrast between these counties. And when you look at the factors that weigh into it, there are some really key indicators that you can help predict really why those factors are the way that they are. And probably one of the most concerning elements is that not only is Duval 48th out of 67 counties, we've actually slid backwards. Last year, we were 43rd in this ranking, and so we've moved backwards 5 steps. And so that's not the direction that we want to be going in our community, and certainly we need to take a look at all of the factors that contribute to that score.
And let's look at those. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the University of Wisconsin released this study looking at everything from access to health care, health behaviors, and social factors like a county's unemployment rate. All of that plays a role.
Absolutely. So, you know, when you look at these rates, some of the things that are consistent across the board, really you can start looking at some of these numbers and predict where they're going to be. So when you look at St. John's County, for example, and you look at the health behaviors and where they're at with adult smoking and adult obesity, food environment index, they rank very highly in all of those, and that helps contribute. Also socioeconomic factors. And then you look at Duval County. Duval County ranks poorly in those, and you can see that those almost go hand in hand. So there are two real major impacts here that come to the overall health outcome, and that is the environmental factors, and some of those we can control, some of those we can't. And then there's the health behaviors of people, what they do in light of those opportunities that they have.
We'll go to your calls in just a moment as a new study ranks Florida's health. In terms of all the different counties in the state, St. John's is the healthiest county in Florida. Duval barely cracks the top 50. We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. You know, the other day when these rankings come out, I saw people posting the study on social media with the tagline or the phrase, wealth equals health. Because St. John's County at number one is a socioeconomically much more wealthy county. What do you think about that?
Well, unfortunately, there's a lot of truth to that. You can say that you can look at someone's zip code and you can have a relatively decent percentage chance of understanding how their health outcomes are going to be. And for example, when you look at 32209 and Northwest Jacksonville, you look at areas that the majority of that zip code resides in what's called a food desert. That means that the majority of people in that area live more than a mile from a supermarket or a grocery store where they can get access to fresh foods. And when you don't have access to fresh foods, that is such a key indicator of your ability to eat healthy and be healthy.
And we've known for years what the challenges are in Duval County, whether it's food deserts, the built environment, poverty, crime, low birth weight, sexually transmitted diseases, HIV and AIDS, asthma, and all of these problems tend to cluster in a few zip codes in the city. And we know what the problems are. Why do you think it's so difficult for Duval to really get serious about addressing them?
Well, and that's really the key question, because you're looking at a constellation of issues. You're looking at all of those issues together, and so there's no silver bullet that can really come up with the one answer. So, yes, there are some infrastructure problems. And you know, when we talked about the food deserts, you know, what incentives are there for a Publix or a Winn-Dixie to build in a location that perhaps they've found is not economically viable for them? And so that's a chicken or the egg situation. There has to be a solution there, but how do we help form that solution?
And the Duval County Health Department says it's going to update its community health improvement plan and start working on addressing some of these issues. Your thoughts?
Well, the community health improvement plan is such an important tool to help not only determine issues and where there might be opportunities, but then to put that plan in action. So, you know, the Duval County Medical Society obviously working closely with the Department of Health in putting this together. But I'll cite a couple of examples of the other counties in the area. So St. John's County, for example. St. John's County aggressively updates their community health improvement plan over time. And when they find an area that of concern, they attack it very aggressively. And again, they have some of the resources and other infrastructure elements in place to tackle that, but that helps them stay out in front. Clay County also last year did the same thing with their CHIP, their County Health Improvement Plan. And one of the things that's interesting is on the outset, you start looking at some of the factors above the surface where you really think this is where we need to tackle. One of the major outcomes that came out of Clay County was the real lack of mental health services in Clay County, mm-hmm. which is not something that was top of mind, but really digging into the data and looking into the resources helps you identify those and come up with plans to do that. So that's what we're undergoing right now in Duval County. It's actually very exciting.
And as we speak with Brian Campbell, who heads up the Duval County Medical Society, a new study shows St. John's County is the healthiest county in Florida, number one on a new list. Duval County way down at number 48. What are your questions about the county you live in? 549-2937. Let's begin in Nassau County. Marianne and Fernandina. Hi, Marianne. Go ahead and turn down your radio, Marianne, and go ahead.
Oh, okay. Hold on, Melissa. 1 second.
Okay. And Nassau County, I think, was what, number 10?
Number 10, that's
number
correct.
10 on the list. So pretty nice ranking for them. Marianne, go ahead.
Oh, hi, Melissa. Sorry. Thank you. I'm concerned. We have tremendous growth in Nassau County. Units are being built all over, and yet we don't have the medical facilities, the doctors. We have one pediatrician in Nassau County on Amelia Island. We have one dermatologist. We have two psychiatrists. And this, any kid getting out of school who has a degree in medical degree can have their student loan paid off in no time. If they just come here, we have to go into Jacksonville. And as we're getting older, we don't have transportation. We can't depend on other people. So this is a big concern of mine in Nassau County.
Yeah. Thanks for that, Marianne. The built environment and transportation, was that part of the study?
Absolutely. And in fact, one of the aspects that she mentioned is one of the key rankings, and that talks about the number of primary care physicians, the number of dentists, the number of mental health providers available per capita. And Nassau is actually significantly behind Duval County and St. John's County in that aspect. And as she mentioned, there are an abundance of physicians and facilities in Duval County. People can come to Duval County. As Nassau continues to grow, though, it will need to build that medical infrastructure. And the Duval County Medical Society actually works closely with the Nassau County Medical Society. So we hope that as the community continues to grow, that the resources available in the medical community will continue to grow as well.
549-2937, Chuck at the Beaches. Hey, Chuck, good morning.
Good morning. I hit on a couple of points. You mentioned smoking, et cetera. I think that's education. It begins in kindergarten, and we work through schools. And you also mentioned mental health. And let me talk about something that we have an issue with, and that's the Affordable Care Act, which can help in all of these counties. The Affordable Care Act, we have an issue with the Affordable Care Act in the state of Florida that you have to make $11,700 to be on the Affordable Care, to get in the Affordable Care Act. And I have family members that have done that. And I can tell you that if you make $13,000 in the state of Florida, you can get on United Healthcare, the Silver Plan, and you pay like $90 a month. And here's the thing about the Affordable Care Act. It requires all of the insurance companies, if I understand correctly, to give mental health. But here's the problem in the state of Florida. We have people that don't make $11,700 that live on the street, and they can't get, if I understand correctly, Medicaid. And one last point. In the state of Florida, we have over 1 million people on the Affordable Care Act. That's 2 million parents. Think of all the friends and the neighbors they have. So Republicans, listen to me. If only 1.5 million or 2 million of those people vote, it's going to be a problem. The Affordable Care Act works, parts of it does, and we need to get it to everyone, not just the people that make over $11,700 a year, so that they can get the mental health they need. Thank you.
Thank you, Chuck.
Well, yeah, one of the key points that Chuck mentioned is there is a gap between Medicaid and Affordable Care Act that was part of the bill that was passed. The state had the option to expand Medicaid mm-hmm. to that level, and they have chosen not to do that. So there is a gap or donut hole, if you will, there of people that are not eligible, and that is a problem.
Does the Duval County Medical Society support Medicaid expansion?
The Duval County Medical Society actually has supported the FMA's promotion of Medicaid expansion in a smart and mannered way. Certainly last year, if you think about the issues with the low-income pool funding, which really impacted Duval County more than any other county in the state, and for UF Health Jacksonville, that's a key component. The number of people that go into that hospital and others that their care is never paid for. There's no payment. And so our belief is that when you give people access to more care, preventative care, et cetera, and also an opportunity to reimburse that, that's better for business, that's better for patients.
And what are your questions as we discuss new county health rankings in Florida? St. Johns County tops the list this year. 549-2937. Interestingly, no calls yet from St. Johns County. But Michael in San Jose is with us. Hi, Michael. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking our call.
Sure.
I enjoy your show most every morning.
Thank you.
I'd like to relate something I found. My wife was in the hospital 3 times last year and in assisted living. She came home with oxygen. She came home with a wheelchair. She came home with a hospital bed. And all that is gone now, and she's lost 100 pounds. But I had a real issue. The doctors prescribed good medicine, but she was often asked, do you feel like taking your medicine? She said no, and of course they'd write down she refused her medicine, and she'd be dead today, honestly, if it wasn't for a good neighbor who was an RN and her husband who helped me support her and bring her home. And she has lost over 100 pounds, and health is a big issue.
Yeah.
But she is doing well. But I find a problem with our medical community that hasn't been mentioned. There's no policing. They're not, as one prominent attorney in this city related the other day, no doctor will testify against another one. And the problem is most of the doctors are fine. The doctors in her case were fine. The medicine just wasn't being given to her. And I brought her home, gave her the same medicine they prescribed, and she became well. So we do need some policing of the doctors, and they have to stop this protecting one another at any cost. I realize that my sister's husband's a physician, so I understand the legal consequences they have to deal with.
Okay.
Honestly, our public needs to be aware that doctors are like mechanics. They're good ones and there's bad ones, and they're not policing themselves. And you need to be aware of that and take care of your loved ones.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for sharing your story.
So, you know, the doctors are like mechanics is an interesting analogy. The difference is that every single vehicle is entirely different and every individual is unique. And so the physicians train clinically to do that. And honestly, physicians are, the oversight with physicians is as significant as any industry. And, you know, sorry to hear this gentleman's story, but certainly one of the issues that, you know, this is not, you know, when you look at these county health rankings, someone said the other day that you can't blame individuals for this, and because certainly there are environmental factors. When you look at that zip code data and you see that there's the correlation there, that's not all on personal choices. But when you look at compliance with medications, there's upwards reports say up to 90% of people are not compliant with the prescriptions that they're given. And so that's a difficult thing. You know, if the physician gives a prescription, you know, the expectation is that that's filled. And so then there becomes, you know, there's responsibility there as well. So it's, like I said, it's one of dozens of factors that play into these overall rankings.
Chris is in Atlantic Beach. Hey, Chris, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for an interesting show, as always.
Thanks.
I have an observation. Maybe a guest can comment on this. I have observed since I've moved to Jacksonville in 1992 from a large Pacific Coast metropolitan area that here folks have a view that poor folks have a right to live, and you know, concessions must be made for them as well. And I wonder if that throws off the numbers in these ratings of cities, including Jacksonville. To get right to the point, I hope I don't sound too blunt, but in a lot of cities, if there was an area like the Moncrief area of Jacksonville, they would decide to put an interstate through it or a new sports facility. Yet in Jacksonville, there's kind of a view that, well, but for the grace of God, so go I, and we've got to take care of our poor and let them live too. And I can't help but think that really skews the numbers, kind of unfortunately makes us look bad.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, and I don't know, you know, I don't know specifically how to respond to that and what other cities might do. And I don't, I'm pretty sure that I would not particularly advocate going into neighborhoods where there are particular poverty issues and necessarily promote these infrastructure changes of that nature in stadiums. I think that you know, we see in this city that there's a lot of thoughts for and against stadium expansions and things like that. So I think, certainly don't think of that as a solution. But again, the point is well made that he makes, that you look at these neighborhoods and that is where you have some of the most troubling health outcomes.
And lots of feedback coming in online about these county health rankings. Ambria emails the show, I'd like to know what was measured in regard to mental health in St. John's County. There are services for those who are on Medicaid, but a lack of services for those who have third-party payer insurance. Mental health is becoming a larger issue as the county grows. So we'll have to follow that, see if that brings their number down. And on our Facebook page, Robert writes, I've lived in St. John's County for years, and I believe it's so healthy because the population is well-educated, well-traveled, and there are lots of transplants from up north, he writes. Janora on Facebook, speaking of those food deserts, it's sad that many of the communities opted out by city council of an ordinance that allows families to keep a small backyard flock of chickens. Some of those communities are in USDA food deserts, meaning that unlike other parts of Jacksonville, they're not allowed to apply for a permit. And there are some other comments on Facebook if you care to join in there. Let's go now to Bonnie in Duval County. Hi, Bonnie. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I'm from Duval County, and my concern is about dental care for the underserved, and that it's hard to help people with mental illness and addiction when they're in severe pain, dental pain. And I wish there was something that could offset that. Thank you.
Thanks, Bonnie.
Sure. So, you know, I think that's one of the areas when you look at what St. John's County has done. St. John's County has been specifically aggressive in providing dental services to the underserved. Duval County has as well. You're just looking at a significantly larger population. But actually, when you look at the number of dentists per capita, Duval County is actually among the best in the state. So the physical access is there. So in that sense, it then becomes an area of connecting the dots and making the actual access, whether it's through insurance or other uninsured ways.
Mary in Duval County. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi, I just was wondering if you could comment on the Duval City contracts and if this program has enough resources to really help the underserved population.
I'm going to be honest, I don't have enough details on that to answer specifically, so I apologize that I don't have that answer for you, but I definitely will look into it, and I'll get back to with Melissa.
And in the meantime, the Duval County Medical Society is active in this space. What else are you working on?
So the details are still getting hashed out, but one of the things that if you look across the board, no matter what county you're in, no matter what the health rankings are, adult obesity is almost consistently in the 33% range. So a third of all adults have a BMI over 30. And when you look at health outcomes, the comorbidities associated with obesity, they're significant. And the thing is, most people know what they need to do. You know, it's the eat less and exercise more.
Yeah, easier said than done.
Exactly, and set some goals. So the Duval County Medical Society and our foundation are actually working with Mayor Curry, hopefully to come up with some incentives and ideas to help the community come together, not just in Jacksonville, but across the First Coast to really tackle this issue as a community.
And we look forward to hearing more about that.
Absolutely.
Thanks for being with us. Brian Campbell is CEO of the Duval County Medical Society, discussing new county health rankings here in Florida. And much more still ahead later. Find out about Heartbeat of the Bold City. It's a new effort to promote entrepreneurship and artists here in the area. But up next, the women leaders of Generation W. Back in a moment.
It's time to give. When you donate now to WJCT, you are supporting all of your favorite public radio programming, and you're also helping us shorten our pledge drive. Our promise to you is that we'll end this fundraiser as soon as we hit our $80,000 goal. Plus, the earlier you give, the better your chances of winning in our prize drawings. The early bird may get an iPad. Learn more by visiting WJCT.org or by calling 904-353-9528.
On the next Fresh Air, how the presidential primary process became the long, confusing, inconsistent process that it is, and what the process might be if the Republicans have a brokered convention. We'll talk with Elaine Kmark, author of the book Primary Politics. She's on the Harvard faculty and was on the commission that created Democratic superdelegates. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Join WJCT for a special sneak preview of Ken Burns' Jackie Robinson documentary, Sunday, April 3rd, in the Virginia Room in the Ringhaver Student Center of Flagler College. The film depicts the life and accomplishments of baseball legend and civil rights pioneer Jack Roosevelt Robinson, who fearlessly crossed baseball's color line and continued fighting discrimination after his baseball career ended. Reception begins at 3 with screening and discussion to follow. This event is free, but registration is required. Info at wjct.org/events.
Just as investigators in France were starting to unravel what they'd missed before November's attacks in Paris, another European city is hit. We'll bring you the latest after Tuesday's attacks in Brussels, and we'll hear how terrorists in Europe have been able to evade detection. That and more later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, it is the premier women's leadership event now, celebrating 5 years of success here on the First Coast. Generation W is coming up next month on the UNF campus, and we're thrilled to present two stellar women leaders right now to give us a preview of everything in store. Generation W founder Donna Orender with us. Good morning.
Oh, hi. How are you? Good morning.
And also with us, Rear Admiral Marty Evans, U.S. Navy, retired. Also the former CEO of Girl Scouts of the USA and the American Red Cross, among other stellar accomplishments. Good to see you.
Well, wonderful to be here today.
So good to have you both on the program. In a moment, we'll hear about the panel on women in the military that Rear Admiral Evans will be moderating at this event. It's coming up Friday, April 8th at UNF. But first, Donna Orender, you founded this 5 years ago, and it's really just grown and developed into just a signature event on the spring calendar. So first off, kudos.
Well, I think it's a testament. I think it's a testament to all of us here. There is an incredibly vibrant community of spectacular women, leadership women. No matter what job they have, they're all about making themselves and the world better. So I think it's a testament to that. And also the fact that this is kind of developed, it has a really like national following. We'll have 11 companies coming from outside of Jacksonville to send some of their women here, and men, by the way, in addition to people from Minneapolis, from California, from Detroit, from New York. I mean, it's pretty cool.
That was the goal from the beginning, wasn't it, to have it go beyond Jacksonville?
Well, I think that we want our city to be known as a thought leadership city. And being a thought leadership city means recognizing what are the ideas at the cutting edge that will help make us excel. And then, what's the great word that I love? And then you want to execute. So let's execute.
And you'll be doing that on Friday, April 8th, Rear Admiral Evans. You will be leading a panel discussion on women in the military. Few more qualified than you to talk about that.
Mission to Serve. It's called
Mission to Serve. And so when you look at women rising into leadership ranks in the military, women now approved for some combat roles, there's a lot to talk about.
There's a huge amount to talk about. And it's exciting to have it on the panel here in Jacksonville, because Jacksonville has one of the largest populations of military across the board.
Absolutely. And for female veterans, they deal with a lot of the same issues that the guys do, but they have another layer of perspective. And I'm just curious to get your thoughts about that.
You know, female veterans, I think, face a special challenge because it hasn't always been recognized that they've played major roles in the military. So when they leave the military, whether it's after an enlistment or it's, in my case, after 30 years of service, they don't tend to be welcomed into the veterans population. And it's very exciting to me that Donna has identified this as an issue, and we're going to bring some light to the opportunities that we have in Jacksonville to support our women veterans better.
And what would you identify as the key things that need to be done?
Well, we know that women veterans, as is the case with male veterans, have some special challenges with PTSD and mental health issues. And for women, the issue of military sexual trauma is there as well. So first of all, mental health support, access to care. Housing for women veterans, transition, job retraining in some cases, employment, that's another challenge. And women veterans, they are more likely to have children than some of their male counterparts, or their male counterparts have others to support taking care of the children. So child care is a special issue.
So Donna, this gives listeners just a small window into the rich discussions that they can be part of and listen to and learn from.
Right. I mean, listen, the level of the panelists, the leadership, women in leadership in the military who are going to join us, who are going to talk about women on the front lines, right? Are we ready to send our women into war? We are doing that. A lot of women think that that should be exactly where we are. And we have Fleet Beldo, who's going to join us. We have the Commandant.
The Cyber Warfare School.
Right, who's going to join us. Of course, Admiral Jackson, who's the head of the Navy Southeast. We have incredible, incredible women that are going to be talking about the military. And I think people will leave inspired. You can't help but not be inspired by these people. You know, one of the greatest, I think, lines as we put together the program is freedom is not free. And these women are on the front lines ensuring that we have our freedom.
And in the wake of the attacks in Brussels this week, it's an especially timely discussion.
It's a very timely discussion. And I think the issue of women in the military who bring, they volunteer, nobody's forced to serve. So they bring motivated, selfless service to the table. They bring skills, they bring education, their talents. It's all about putting the right person in the right job in the military. And sometimes that happens to be a qualified male. Many other times it's a qualified female. So I think it's in the country's interest, if we want to have the strongest military possible, to be able to use the talents of women in our national defense.
And this is one of those issues, let me just quickly jump in here, Melissa, whereby Generation W is about education, inspiration, connection, but it's about action. So this is the first in a multi-part series. We will talk about the mission to serve. People will be inspired. They're going to want to know what they can do. They're going to want to learn more. And on April 26th at Florida Blue, we will be co-hosting along with the City Veterans Office a follow-up discussion with many of the city services as well as women on the front lines who are active service to talk about continuing the discussion mission to serve. How do we take the energy and interest that we're going to generate and funnel it and move it towards greater action to make ourselves better? So this is not only about inspiration, education, and connection, but it really is also about action.
And as I look through the list of speakers for Generation W, quite a few military heads, including some, there are some male speakers on the agenda too. It's not all women speaking.
That's right. And that's pretty exciting, I think, to know that we can include men on the program.
Well, it's all about the we. This is all about team. And so we say it takes a multiplicity of voices, then it's incumbent upon us to enact that belief, and that includes both men and women at the table.
So it's Generation W coming up Friday, April 8th, all day on the UNF campus. Mark your calendar now. Be part of it. WJCT is a media sponsor of this event now celebrating 5 years on the First Coast. You can register now and learn more at their website. It's genwnow.com. And Donna Orender, who founded this event, once again, kudos to you. And Rear Admiral Evans, thanks so much, both of you, for being with us today.
Oh, Melissa, our pleasure, always.
Thank you so much,
Melissa.
Thank you.
We're back in a moment.
Britta Yunga signed up with a group that said it was investing in poor countries. But she says the money was going in the opposite direction.
We hired local planes to transport the local currency every week.
You rented airplanes to carry cash?
Yes.
That's on the next Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Relax Radio is coming to 89.9 FM, April 1st. Tune in to the music of your life only on 89.9 FM, WJCT. Your community, your world.
Hello, young lovers, whoever you are. I hope your troubles are few.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.
Stay connected. Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, primary results for three states and what the latest delegate math means for both Republicans and Democrats, plus the latest on the investigation into the deadly terror attacks in Belgium.
Weekdays at 10, right after First Coast Connect on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, the new film Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice hits theaters this weekend, featuring two beloved superheroes with two very different personas. When you think about Batman vs. Superman, it's sort of realism versus idealism. Our occasional pop culture philosophy contributor, Dr. Nick Michaud, is here with his thoughts and a little bit about his new book, Batman, Superman, and Philosophy. Good morning.
Hey, Melissa, how you doing?
Only you could... link Batman and Superman to deep philosophical thoughts, and I know you will do it with total brilliance, so I cannot wait to hear this.
Oh, now the pressure's on. Well, I'm gonna try my best.
I love this. And I just want to jump in with this quick anecdote before we get your thoughts. I was at the movies last night seeing something, and there was this line out the door for a preview screening of Batman versus Superman, which shows you how it resonates with people.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be absolutely huge. There's an excellent chance that I might have been one of those people in line. I'm sure I will see the film over and over and over again. It's one of these things that people have been waiting for, insofar as people want to see. Comic book lovers and superhero lovers have always wanted to finally see this clash of these two major kind of icons in our culture.
And they sort of represent two competing visions of America in a way, don't they?
Oh, very much so. And it's interesting because you can pretty quickly just see it as, oh, well, who's stronger and who can beat up the other? And it seems like, well, that's obviously and easily Superman, right? And then you have to bring kind of kryptonite into fray. And like, no, Batman would have some kryptonite. But then you realize, well, actually what's happening is, in a deeper argument, competing ideologies, right? So Superman is this very helpful character, right? And kind of reflective of like what we potentially could be intellectually, like how we can overcome and how we can arise. And Batman, on the other hand, is a good deal more cynical. He mm-hmm. seems to be kind of representative of how bad people really can be and how there has to be someone always kind of watching them and prepared to stop them. So for me, I guess there's this interesting question of, well, which one actually is more accurate to who we really are, right? Because they both have these tragic origin stories, but deal with them kind of in different ways, right? Superman and Batman are both orphans. But Superman is, we're told, right, sent to us to be this beacon of hope as he escapes from his exploding planet, right? And so from this horrible event that happens comes this shining light for all humanity to look up towards. But at the same time, he's something that we can never be. So there's this weird idealism involved in terms of, oh, look up to me, be like me, but we can't. Where Batman, on the other hand, literally saw his family gunned down right there in front of him. Mm-hmm. And so how do you in fact ever escape from the realism and grit of that? And so I think that on one hand, Superman is better for our hearts, right? It's this idea of you can be awesome, that human beings can do something amazing. But I wonder if maybe Batman is the one that's more accurate to who we really are. Things come to mind like the fact that most of the chocolate that we buy is picked by child slaves who are between like ages 5 and 12 and beaten every day. And when information comes out about that, some research suggests that we actually bought even more of it. So
wow.
maybe Batman's kind of right. Maybe being cynical about humanity is more realistic.
That's a pretty depressing thought, Nick. So you don't see any hopeful message in this new film?
Well, I'm sure that in the new film, there will be this reason to believe that these two heroes can come together and that there's this moderate belief between the two, right? And I'm sure we'll get lots of happy violence. But at the same time, I'm reminded of a very popular film that came out a few years ago was The Dark Knight. And there's this moment in The Dark Knight where, which is a Batman film, where these two boats filled with people are told, if you don't blow up the other boat filled with this other group of people, we're just going to blow up both boats, right? And in the film, we're handed this beautiful story where everyone in both boats basically decides, you know what? We're not going to push the button. They haven't pushed the button on us either. And I can't help but think, wow, that's the one thing about that film that was really inaccurate. Hmm. Like if we were on those boats, we'd probably be climbing over each other to push the button.
Oh, man. What do you think these two competing visions have to say, especially now in this election year, with this dark, angry undertone going through the process, yet another terrorist attack overseas?
Yeah, I think it speaks directly to it. It's one of those issues where you realize, like, Superman is a vision that we're losing that is, in fact, really, again, quite good for our hearts. You're talking about someone who doesn't wear a mask, right? And who is just there at the forefront, whereas Batman is a symbol of fear. Like, he specifically chooses to be something that scares him so that he can scare others. And it seems to me that part of our motivation in this election, the thing that's motivating a whole lot of people is fear and fear of terrorism. And instead of kind of asking ourselves, what can we do with the short time that we all have to be excellent? It's more of how can I kind of curl up and find something that can protect me and find someone who's going to protect me and keep me and my family safe. We are terrified of immigrants, and we're terrified of the economy tanking again, and we're terrified of terrorists. And there's just a kind of philosophical fact that we all kind of want to ignore, which is the fact that we all eventually die. The question is, do you live your life afraid before then, or do you live your life out in the sun like Superman?
Always fascinating to host you on the show. Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Dr. Nick Michaud will be out with his new book, Batman, Superman, and Philosophy, next month. And we'll be back in a moment with Heartbeat of the Bold City.
I'm Gail Sturman, and proud to be a member of WJCT's Board of Trustees. Can we shorten WJCT's spring fundraiser? Let's find out. It's time to give now. When we get to our goal of $80,000, the fundraiser ends. If this station is as important to you as it is to me, please join us. Donate now at WJCT.org.
WJCT and Grassroots Natural Market are accepting submissions from local artists for The Square. The Square is an online venue where artists share their work with the community and compete for a chance to be featured on WJCT TV and radio. Submit now through April 30th. To learn more about The Square and to submit your work, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
I'm Al Letson, and I'm hosting a brand new show here on WJCT, and I'm bringing some friends with me.
Everything, with Al Letson as the host and Willie Evans Jr. as the DJ. Well, he's not really a DJ, but he does something.
Every week, we'll be bringing you some stories, some laughs, and something to think about. Sundays at 2 and Wednesdays at 1. Everything. It's a new show, because we're going to do everything we want.
Everything. The opposite of nothing.
People think they know stuff. Have their little theories, conjectures, beliefs, but when you're about to put everything on the line, there is no room for error. On the next Snap Judgment, we proudly present Proof. Snap Judgment, storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, we want to tell you about a brand new thing in town called Heartbeat of the Bold City. It's a new speaker series that will connect the local community with artists, creatives, and entrepreneurs who are driving our culture in this area by giving them a platform to share stories and also put on live events and create new content with digital media. Heartbeat of the Bold City founder Jessica Pounds is here now. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And also with us, local speaker and musician Christina Wagner.
Hi, how are you?
Good to see you both. So Jessica, this is launching this spring. What inspired this?
Really just being a part of the creative community. I'm in a band called Canary in the Coal Mine, and we've been playing for about 5 years. And just seeing how people's stories, you know, are so important and need to get out there, the people that are driving our culture and community.
So this will be a speaker series. People can mark their calendars for whatever interests them.
Right. It's every second and fourth Thursday in Hemming Park.
Oh, wow. And who have you lined up so far?
We just had Nick Davis, who's a local comic. He was the first speaker. Christina is tomorrow. And then we have Jared Ripkema from Bridge 8 Magazine, Philip Pan, the concertmaster of the Symphony Orchestra, and a lot of other folks coming out.
All right. So, Christina, you're going to be talking about your experience in the local music scene, how the entire community can help improve it, make it even better.
Absolutely. Kind of in a sense of like taking a step back and making a leap forward, you know.
really kind of exploring, you know, going back out to you know, music venues, really supporting the local scene, whether it's, you know, because I actually, I own a place in Five Points called Rain Dogs, and, you know, and kind of getting people back out there. We do comic. We actually host Nick on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. We have an open mic night, getting people on the stage, getting participants to get more involved in social and step back a little bit from technology and hindering, you know, social interaction.
You really want more face-to-face.
I think that that's important. I think that we've lost a lot of touch with that with technology.
Yeah, well, and putting this on in the park is a way to get people physically together, but then later they can distribute all these ideas online. They can do a bit of both, right?
Exactly. It's a great experience.
And this is also part of, I think, Hemming Park's new rebirth of always having something interesting going on in that park every day of the year. You guys are going to be part of that.
Absolutely, and we're glad to be a part of it, for sure.
Yeah, so this is a speaker series, and it will be free.
Anyone can just
come and listen and join in and apply, maybe, to be part of it?
Yeah, and we have live music before and after.
And how are you picking the bands?
Oh, just people that I like.
Oh, so they have to be friends with Jessica. Is
no,
that how
no,
it works?
No. I'm actually working a lot with the speakers to see who they feel would be a good fit with their content and everything like that, too.
And tell us a little bit about what you've been up to with your band as well.
We just played Springfest,
which
was
a lot
of fun. Yeah,
We're
kind of in the beginning phases of starting writing some new music that we'll hopefully put on a new album.
Okay, great. And when you talk about the local music scene in Jacksonville and Northeast Florida, it's a different picture today, I would say, than even 10 years ago. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I started playing music about 20 years ago, and it was a completely different scenario. This is also before the internet was really prevalent, or, you know, trying to wait 30 minutes in order just to get the dial-up to work, you know.
Uh-huh.
So I think, I think it is and it isn't. We have had a couple, like, big acts that have come out of here that I haven't really identified with, you know, personally. But we have so many great artists out, like, then and now, and I just think it just, I don't
know. And what would you like to see happen for it to be, I don't know, even more vibrant?
And the thing that I do miss is, like, the attendance that I used to see. Like, you can go at Milk Bar any day of the week and you would have at least 40, 50 people. And now we have such incredible shows that happen all over town. And it's disheartening to see the same bands that, you know, have even gotten better, you know, and then you see the attendance has gone down 20%.
I cannot tell you how many people to this day say that they miss the Milk Bar.
Oh, who doesn't miss the Milk Bar?
And how long ago did it close?
Oh, gosh.
How long has it been? 20 years?
I had my 16th birthday there, and I think it closed around when I was 18. I'm 34. So, yeah, it's been like, I think it was like 98. Maybe.
Does the city need a new Milk Bar or something? And it wouldn't be called that, but a place like that?
I mean, I try to do it with...
You think you're doing it with Rain Dogs?
I'm trying to do it with Rain Dogs.
Yeah. She's doing it.
and when something goes away, there's always maybe nostalgia that can even
Well,
be,
absolutely. But again, this was pre-internet where you couldn't just...
That's right.
This was all before YouTube, so people had to go out
people
to shows.
People had to go. That and was the only way they could hear the music.
You sit there and you would have to make a flyer, you know, at your local supermarket and hand it to people physically. That's why I think that we're missing... is taking it back, you know, to try to be more face-to-face in human interaction.
Yeah, those personal interactions make such a difference, which is what your goal is, right?
Absolutely.
And what else is going to be part of Heartbeat of the Bold City?
Well, you know, we're just starting out, so this is kind of a lot to take on, 16 sessions with 16 different speakers, but we hope to establish a mentorship program in the future that partners up-and-coming artists with more established well-known people that can help them and help develop the next generation of creatives and musicians and artists and entrepreneurs.
Yeah. So now you know what my life is like. You're going to have to book a bunch of people all the time. Welcome to my world, Jessica. There's a lot more to it than people realize.
Yeah.
But the good news is that you do want people to pitch you and get their ideas.
Absolutely.
So how can they get a hold of you?
We are on Facebook, Heartbeat of the Bold City. That's the easiest way to get in touch with us right now. So just search Heartbeat of the Bold City.
Excellent. And people need to come out and see your talk, which is tomorrow?
It is.
What time?
I think I'm speaking around,
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock, but Jessie Montoya is playing before and after. She plays it, starts at 5 o'clock.
That's
okay,
right.
So come on down to Hemming Park tomorrow night for Christina Wagner's talk. It's part of the new speaker series in the park, Heartbeat of the Bold City. Find them on Facebook. Founder Jessica Pounds and local musician and Rain Dogs owner Christina Wagner with us both this morning. And thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
That's our show. Thanks for listening today. And thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Make sure to subscribe to the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And you can now watch the show video on demand segments every day at tvjax.com. And our other partner, metrojacksonville.com, puts some of them up as well. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.